What's up, guys? This is the Californication 2020 podcast. I'm your host, D22 Soso Wayne Chen of the Live the Life Poker Stream. I don't know, UCSD claims me on Twitter, and this is Michael Amos, who
apparently I crushed Jeopardy, according to what you wrote on the YouTube.
Yeah, you crushed Jeopardy, and also Barry Woods asked who you were, and I was like, well, I'm Asian. I'm not going to get cast by myself.
Yeah, no, but like, you know, I mean, here's the thing. Who the fuck are you? You know, like, if you don't know who I am, like, that's your loss. I mean, you know,
it's true.
Don't ask who I am. Ask who you are.
I told Barry Woods you're a very crucial piece of this two person combination.
Thanks, man. You know, I wish you would have told my ex-wife that as well.
I still can.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Yeah. I'll give you your email address just to go ahead and send it, and you know, I'm sure she'll be. She'll appreciate that.
Make sure you send her the work one, so I get credit for doing work.
Yeah. Well, did you have you got a lot of stuff done today? So we're recording this about 2:30 in the morning. It's now officially crossed into September 11th. So happy September 11th, everybody!
Shout out to September 11th, and I also something dirty. When September 11th happened, I was actually in New York a week before.
Wow.
Like Magic the Gathering, I was in the Team Pro Tour with Brian Weissman and Hui Sing Chui, and then he recounted that was going on, which I actually blanked out because I was in the midst of getting dumped
by an
ex. I
mean, yeah.
So in my mind, that trumped 9/11.
Well, did you care, though? Like, did you actually like her, or were you just kind of with her because, like, she was the only one around?
No, I did. I mean, there's definitely a time. Yeah. But, you know, I think, you know, she's happily ever after now. So.
So what would you say was worse, getting dumped or seeing, like, the buildings, like, up in flames and, like, people, like, leaping off the building and then the buildings tumble down and then having to suffer through George Bush for, like, an additional 4 years as a result? Like, which was worse? Probably getting dumped, right?
Yeah, probably getting dumped.
Yeah, I'm sorry, man. Like, personal stuff, you know, just, if you're not really part of it, you know, at the end of the day,
No, I mean, it's, like, they were both, it was just, like, to be fair, when it happened, she called that morning and asked, you know, or told me, so.
Oh, because she was trying to, like, reach out to you because it was, like, this, it was this really, like, emotional experience, right? Like, having to watch that, you know what, we can, before we do this, we can talk a little bit about what was happening on that day since we are, you know, honoring 9/11 here.
Sure,
in some way.
9/11, yeah.
Yeah. And so what I was doing that day was I had been up all night playing heads up poker on Paradise Poker. And I had classes that I had to go to in the morning. And amazingly, so I was playing... I actually wasn't playing heads up because it was a big table because there was a little bit of a discussion about it. And I was playing and people like on the chat started talking about a plane flying into the World Trade Center. But of course, like when you just hear that offhand, you just think it's
like Rip Doyle, right? It's like, dude, it can't be real, right?
Well, no, the first thing I thought it was real, but just thought it was like a really small plane, you know, some like small plane out of control or whatever, you know, things like that. It's really unlikely that would happen, but it could happen. It actually has happened in the past. Like I think a small plane hit the Empire State Building in the past, so it's a thing. But yeah, so the guy says it and then you're like, okay, so you turn on the news right away, right? And you know, you pick your propaganda station and turn it on, and then immediately, like I hit the news right as the second one was going in. Like I didn't even realize that they weren't showing like a replay, you know, that this was like a, like I seriously turned the TV on like 10 seconds before there was exactly. And, you know, and everyone's confused. And now it's, you know, it's so much worse when the second one hits, because now you're like, and that day was, I mean, this moment that we're in right now in American history is the most extended anxiety I've had to suffer. Like it just feels absolutely interminable, you know, before we get to this, you know, election. And see if we get, you know, like hard absolute fascism or just like the kind of soft corporate fascism that we're used to. And, but September 11th, the day, I mean, were you on the West Coast? Were you back home?
I was on the West Coast, yeah.
You might have slept through the first part of it. because it was really early. I mean,
No.
it would
It
have
was
been
like
before.
6 a.m., I know,
Yeah.
because I got a call from
Okay.
that.
Yeah. And
And
this is
asked if I was
after.
okay.
Well, I guess we did have cell phones, right? But like the cell phone that I had at that time, did you get a call on your cell phone or your home phone?
Think it was cell.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Yeah.
Had to be
So,
cell, right? Yeah, I
but that
think
stuff
so.
just kept happening, and it was just like, oh my gosh, how bad is it gonna get?
Yeah.
Like the Pentagon and another plane, there were like all kinds of reports. Like there were like all these random reports that turned out to be not true of like bombs going off everywhere in Washington, D.C. And I actually went down to school, which didn't make a lot of sense. They canceled school, so my buddy and I went to Chili's because that's what you do when you're a college student and the world's collapsing around you, is you go to Chili's because where better place? I mean, Chili's is already like a pretty good representation of a collapsed, society, so we might as well hang out there.
What did
And
Ja
I
Rule
also,
think?
what?
What did Ja Rule think?
I don't know. Did he weigh in on that?
Yeah, so I guess this is a running joke, which is less like MTV's like, Ja, what do you think? Where's like, dude, we like the World Trade Center just had two planes fly into it. Like, who cares what Ja Rule think? Like, Dave Chappelle made jokes about it too.
Got it, got it, got it. Sorry, I'm out of the loop on that stuff. I generate my own internal humor. I don't rely on external humor like the rest of the mediocre people. So,
And now it's getting publicized. Before I was one of the few people that got to, experience it firsthand. But anyway, go ahead. Like I totally get why you went to school that day, because it's like, oh, you ditch class every day. Now you know it's gonna be closed. So you go there and said, hey, I came. I was in attendance, but the school's closed due to this incident in New York. So you want credit for it. Your audio is like off.
you hear me at all?
I can hear you now.
All
Okay,
right, so
go.
I'm back. So I just missed. I appreciate you just picking up the slack here because I just missed pretty much everything you said. It appeared as if my internet went out. This is what you get with Spectrum. I don't know what company you have,
Have
but
Spectrum. They have the
yeah, no.
great
So
tower.
ha having to suffer Spectrum, right, which I think is the old Charter, that's like experiencing 9/11 every day.
Well,
I
you could
mean,
hear on the replay, it was a great monologue that I did. So,
thanks. I
don't
will
worry.
definitely. No, I'll definitely check it out because, look, frankly, I'm trying to get those YouTube views up any way I can, right? So I log on under every one of my accounts. I just crank those views up because I know it makes you feel good. And
So
that's the kind of friend I am.
episode one is seven thumbs up.
Yeah.
How many are you?
Oh,
Only one's
seven.
me. Only
Yeah.
one's me.
Oh, well, I must be forgetting one of my accounts. It'll be eight soon. Yeah. No, but thank you guys. If you guys came on and gave us a thumbs up, feel free to leave some, kind and generous constructive criticism in the comments. We're happy to take your criticism, and we're kind of arrogant, so we'll probably just throw it out. But there's a chance it'll get through to us.
Sure.
And if you just want to be a dick too, you could do that. I mean, it's the internet. I mean, that's kind of cliched, like you're regular Hank Moody if you do that. But
We're gonna upset a lot of demographics. Like, the SJWs are gonna be mad at us, right?
I am an SJW, so that's not my that's
Oh, they'll be mad at me, probably.
sorry, what's that?
SJWs will be mad at me, right? My takes.
No, I don't. Listen, there. I mean, there's some legitimate stuff to be mad at potentially, and this is a really difficult show to discuss, and it's a perhaps problematic
Or
show
discover,
to.
for that matter.
Yeah, or discover or enjoy, right? Like if I mean, so I wouldn't be surprised if some people were somewhat upset with things, but I most honestly most people understand and have a sense of humor. So I'm not and I would not I think that SJW is really kind of this I think it's kind of a lie. I mean, those are my people. So
What about the
if
cancel culture people? They're gonna find something wrong?
Yeah, no, I don't think. I mean, they well, cancel culture is. I don't. It's a myth. So I'm not worried about them. I mean, and if they cancel me, right? If I get canceled, right? Which who has actually been canceled? Because it seems like when you get canceled, you get to scream about it forever. But if I get canceled, that just puts me back in the same hole I'm already in. So what's the difference?
Well, the Asian American academics will rip on me because I actually did not make it into the UCLA MFA program. Don't worry, you're back. So I did not complete my master's. I was only interviewed twice for the UCLA MFA program, which is kind of a.
So here's the thing. The way to look at that is you canceled them, you know, like
Sure.
fuck them. You know, listen, there's a lot of people who don't recognize talent out there, you know, and the more I live every day, right, the more I understand this. 'Cause I walk around and I'm just like, why do you people not understand how awesome I am?
I have insight on their selection process, so if I applied one more time, I had a pretty strong chance of getting in, but.
Well, I think here's the thing, Wayne. What most likely happened was they probably Googled you, right? And they didn't see Californication 2020 podcast. And so now you have very likely crossed the threshold into getting admitted. But the co competition is very, very difficult in that space. And by the way, it's also like, I mean, it's a really difficult field to figure out who actually has talent. You know, and it's one of those things where there are lots of talented people who just who fall by the wayside, because what happens is you run into, you know, somebody and they're like, well, who the fuck is this guy, right? Like, and you know, that's over. So you know, I feel your pain. I can tell that you're carrying this pain with you. And
Which part? Because we talked about the X right before 9/11 too.
well, I mean, yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of pain, right? It is. Look, one of the things that's difficult about getting old, right, and aging is, you know, people always focus on the fact that, you know, your body breaks down, your joints hurt, you as soon as you try to do like one pull up, right, your skin, you know, starts to look like, you know, disgusting, and you know, come closer and closer to Miss Havisham, you know, as every day passes
Shout out to
by.
Great Expectations.
Yeah.
Oh, you read that too, eh? Okay.
No, I haven't read it. You remember I did well on Jeopardy, so I just know all these like random characters from literature, right? No, I have read Great Expectations. It's been a while.
Shout out to
So,
Pip.
but yeah, right. Yeah, he's kind of a very naive kid there.
He's a good kid. Don't hate on Pip.
Yeah, well, you know, Miss Havisham was probably a good kid too before she got left at the altar.
Ooh.
So, you know, and that's really some foreshadowing, although we're not there yet.
All right,
So
well,
why don't we?
shout out to Magwitch, shout out to Joe, shout out to Estella, and this is episode 2 of season 1. And thank you for braving through that intro if you haven't like left already. So Michael was commenting that we're lame for reviewing a 13-year-old show, and I was like, well, it's better than watching, 13-year-old girls. And if any women are watching this and the guy next to you isn't laughing or saying, oh snap, then it's time to stop funking and start punching.
Yeah, I mean, it's very timely, right? The whole idea, I mean, I thought there was some stuff that we left out in the last episode, which is once you find out that Mia is only 16, right, which goes along with the kind of joke that you made, because I mean,
It's not a
you
joke,
know,
Mike.
and no, it's not a joke, but like, I mean, we did kind of have to touch on it in the first episode, and the truth is, like, having to talk about and deal with, you know, teenagers who are sexualized is a really uncomfortable thing in a lot, and especially for guys who are out here, we're trying to make jokes, right? We're trying to entertain people, but that's not really a joking matter, and
Sure.
it's tough to make jokes on that. I mean, you know, I mean, we could throw out some, like, you know, I mean, I've got a whole drawer full of Jared Fogle jokes, but they're in the drawer because they're not funny. And what the I think what's really difficult here is, you know, I mean, they showed, right? Like, we end up finding out that Mia is 16. I mean, they showed Mia naked, right, in the show. And there's like, you know, there's a level of creepiness to that. And like, of course, you know, when they do this in shows, when they have teenagers, you know, and they show them naked, they're well, at least, you know, after Zeffirelli and Romeo and Juliet and things like that, they're older actors, right? But from a viewer's position, right, there's still like there's a real level of discomfort with that for me, because there's not really a lot of discomfort seeing it when you see Mia, because Mia, I mean, she doesn't look 16, right? I mean, she's not 16, she's actually an older actress, but then when you find it out afterwards, like you have to like reflect back on that a little bit, and it's a pretty uncomfortable thing.
Again, I'm here to appreciate the story and dialogue, so
Sure, but I mean, I get it. I get it totally, but like look, teenage sexuality is uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable in the way that like every once in a while, when you're like when you're out, you're like driving, right? And you see like a girl from the back, and of course you do that stupid driving thing where like you drive past her and then you like crane your neck all the way around to, like see, and then like you realize it's like somebody who's too young, right? And you're just like, oh no. And it's like it's just this like awful feeling because you're like, wow, I just seriously checked out like a 16-year-old ass. And that's like it's I mean it's normal and it's good, right? And it's good that we've been socialized to like not to be like, yeah, that's not okay, right? But it's a really uncomfortable thing, right? Because teenagers are actually sexual beings, right? They sleep with each other, they're sexual beings with each other, they are somewhat developed, right? And things like that. So this, but I think it's a really interesting and it's a really interesting choice to have a character that you are representing as 16 and to put that character naked, right? With like
You're
a
right.
dirty.
I actually didn't think of that, but you're absolutely right. But like
So.
you mentioned in Romeo and Juliet, like Juliet's supposed to be like 13 there, and like the what was the 1950s version, and then she was topless.
I mean, Zeffirelli's not 1950s, right?
What, I don't know, Zeffirelli.
That's the one you're talking about.
Okay, I don't know what year it is.
So, it's 1968 actually.
Okay.
And it definitely created something of a stir when
She was underaged, yeah.
oh
She
yeah.
was actually underaged.
Yeah, no, she was
The
like
girl who
14.
played Juliet, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, not okay. So anyways, for the quote unquote SJWs, right? I mean, these are positive changes that I think we're seeing in the world, right? And trying to get rid of Roman Polanski, but I mean, it takes forever, right? I mean, how long was Harvey Weinstein in Hollywood and things like that, right? So we can't, I mean, that's the thing, that all of that goes into this level of discomfort, and we can't ignore these things. And I mean, I think it's fair to ask questions about what Hollywood should be doing. It's also fair to ask questions about what we should be doing as observers and how we should feel about this as observers. And it's probably not okay. And like you said last time, or you've maybe told me outside of the podcast, but this is a show that started in 2007 that we're reviewing. It could not be made in 2020 the way it is.
Bang, bang.
It just can't. I mean, there's some really, I mean, there are some ways in which this show, I think, portrays women really positively, but there are some ways where it absolutely does not. And maybe we'll come back to that.
Becca, good girl.
Sure. Yeah.
All right, so let's get on the episode. So,
Right.
start of the episode, Hank and Karen kiss and make up. Oops, just kidding. It was a dream again.
Yeah. Another bad beat for Hank, right? Poor guy. So, but what we got out of that intro, right, was I think it showed the intro showed like a lot of his writer's block, right? And showed a guy who like misses who like misses New York,
Yeah.
which they
This whole episode was probably like trying to, spoilers in the episode, but it does try to rekindle a lot of nostalgia, or just like a lot of characters are trying to recall nostalgically the good times, and it's probably better if we do it like sequentially getting
Yeah.
into it.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought that was at the very beginning where they they opened with like the flashback and it showed him like really struggling with writer's block after they moved to LA and he just seemed like a guy who was, I mean, because the thing about like Hank being like this out of place New Yorker is a little bit interesting because like frankly he seems to me quite at home in Southern California and
I agree, but it's there's always going to be this, like, especially with like the hardcore white Americans, it's just like this New York versus LA and or New York versus San Francisco, like rivalry that doesn't really exist, 'cause like they're all independently their own things, and it's just like it's people have this like fictitious narrative. Like really, I don't think they care about each other. Like, SFSFs, LA's LA, New York's New York.
No, and people, the kinds of people who like any one of those places actually tend to like all of them. So right. It's a really strange, it's a really strange thing. It's almost like, you know, we have this like tribalism thing where we have to like create rivalries of all kinds, and we have to create this like bogus rivalry. Like, I'm a Southern California person, I'm a Northern California person. It's like, yeah, okay, right? Like, the real rivalry is between living in a cool place and then having to live in like the Midwest, right? That's the real rivalry. Yeah. No, if you're watching from the Midwest right now, okay, thank you for watching. Turn us off. I don't like you. Go ahead, Wayne.
So then, you know, Hank and Karen are kissing, making up, and then boom, it's a dream, and Hank's alone in his Porsche, his dusty Porsche.
Yeah.
And this lady's, you know, in the other car, and she just like, you know, eyes Hank and tosses, you know, this folded piece of paper, you know, with her number, hugs and kisses, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, she just asks, like, you know, what do you do? And he's like, oh, I'm a writer. And it's like, she's like, ooh. And it's like, whoa, there's like this secret job that women just secretly, you know, fall for, right, you over, which is like, yeah, you know, in reality, it's definitely not writer.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a strange thing, right? Because they definitely, he, like, writer in this show is definitely like actor. I think you mentioned that last time, where it's like, these are, this is not a job that people go for. But then again, most writers aren't maybe driving a Porsche, right? Yeah. And most writers don't look like, you know, David Duchovny. So, you know, that's, that all of that stuff matters.
Maybe this is like for a different conversation, but just like, you know, when I listen to female comedians like, you know, Whitney Cummings or something like that, and they're joking, one of her jokes was just like, it's not that the policeman or the fireman's hot, it's that they have a job that makes them hot.
Well, listen, all I can say is, sadly, right now, you and I don't really pass that, we don't really get over that bar.
Sure.
So I guess we're still on the outside looking in as...
Once we get that Patreon set up, you know, donate a couple bucks.
Well, that's true, man. I'll be like, yo, I'm making like $7 a month on Patreon, honey. Come on. You know, yeah. No, actually, that's the kind of stuff that I say now, and it doesn't work. So,
so really the job, like, doesn't matter that much. It's just like how you carry yourself, the dude, like, you know, that you could. I don't want to say, I ain't saying she a gold digger, but, you know.
No.
She's got to pay for, or the guy's got to pay for the dates, got to have a place to live, and, you know.
Sure.
Like, a car. Yeah. It's just like, you know.
Yeah. No, sure. But, of course, those, that standard, right, like, I mean, none of that stuff is enough in LA because there's just too many guys that meet that standard. So, yeah, it gets a lot higher. But, you know, obviously Hank Mooney is not like normal people. He has now had, I mean, the over under for the kinds of things, the kind of thing that just happened to him with like a girl coming by and like throwing a note with her number at him, the like lifetime over under on that for like normal guys is 1, right? Or is like 0.5, right? Because like maybe it happens to you once. But probably not. I guess something like that something like that did happen to me once.
Oh! Was,
yeah. And I was driving a 2003 Ford Taurus.
Oh, you know? It actually happened to you when you were driving?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Wow. That's like, I was just like thinking like, just period. I'm like, wow, I don't even
think. Yeah, no, I mean, it was at a stoplight. And, yeah, I mean, I don't know if they were being serious, but I think they were. It was actually 2 girls. And what they were offering was interesting, but I was in a relationship at the time. So
she was serious. She saw you on Jeopardy.
Yeah, I think probably that's it. I mean, it was a long time ago. So, you know, I mean, I was pretty hot.
Well, that's Hank Mooney. He just, you know, gets all the hookups, but.
Yeah, and then he says to her. He says to her, oh, he opens the note, right? And they don't show us the note until later, right? I don't think this is spoiling too much, but like later on when he's at the bar and he like looks, he's feeling a little bit bad because the girl left, and he looks at the note, and all it is like her name and a number. So like, I want to know, like, when he saw the note and he was like, oh, I think you have potential. Like, really, dude? It was just like the name and the number, like that was it? What'd you expect to be on the note? Like a smiley face? Like, you know, like a you know, drawing of a large penis? I don't know what, you know, what was supposed to be there.
I mean, maybe guys have unrealistic expectations too, so yeah.
Yeah, oh, that certainly is true, yeah. So, moving on then.
Hank drives the Bill's place.
We
Calling me
meet. This is the
Bob.
first time we meet Bill, right?
No, we met him last episode. Wait. I don't know. Damn.
Yeah, I don't think we met. Here's the thing. Bill was not in the last episode
Okay.
because he's
All
out
right.
of town, right? When they go back,
Right.
right? He's out of town. So like Mia's there, but Bill's not. He's out of town. This is the first time we meet Bill, and almost one of the first things that Hank says to Bill is like, "Do you want a cock punch?" Right? This is like, this is some infantile and really inhuman dialogue. I mean, but I guess
They're
I guess there's
both,
some history there.
yeah, there's
What?
some history, there's some competition. I mean, it's like, when two guys are claiming that a
Yeah.
woman belongs with that dude,
Right.
they're gonna have a little rivalry. Like, there's fights,
He also got in a homo says what, right? Which
Yeah.
is, I mean, again, stuff that does not exist anymore and really shouldn't exist anymore.
Sure.
So, I mean, that's the way that, I talked when I was a school kid because, I didn't have anyone to slap me upside the head and tell me that, you really shouldn't say stuff like this. You grew up in the Bay Area, so you guys didn't use language like this. I grew up in the Midwest. Probably some Midwesterners watching
Oh,
this right
in the
now.
Bay Area, when they say homo, they're like Homo sapiens, and
Sure.
I'm just and I was like Homo superior because I'm like a Marvel comics fan, so
Ooh,
I guess.
yeah, that's nice. The better one is Homo erectus, but yeah. So that's you guys are a lot more advanced, really. I'm sure they're still using that in the Midwest. I'm sure it's still, just like it's all the laughs and knee slaps at the party. Right, so.
So. Yeah, and then Hank calls Bill by the wrong name, Bob, just to set up a childish joke. Shout out to Tom Capinos for having jokes more childish than me, which is like, I'm jealous and I'm hating. Bill claims that Becca doesn't want to see Hank.
Yeah.
And then they exchange parenting jabs and just like, well, yeah, and then Hank's like, oh, yeah, so you're going to teach me about parenting? He's like, and Bill's like, yeah, I'm a really good parent. And then Hank's like, ooh.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I mean, no, that's off. I mean, that's a really, for the viewer right there, that's a pretty intense scene because we know a whole lot that Bill doesn't know. And Bill has a pretty naive view of his daughter. And I mean, it is really naive because and yeah, I mean, it's we'll get there because there's the pool scene. Is she in the pool at this
I don't think
time? Is she in the
so.
pool with she's in the pool with her with like in a bikini, right? Or that later on in the episode.
That's later on in the episode
Okay.
because
Okay.
they're in the front, they're in the
All right.
front, and then
I'll say I'll say I'll save it for then because Bill. But okay, I'm not going to save it. Bill is basically the kind of loser dad right there that Hank was when he went to the teachers conference and he was like, all right, Becca's not going to be dating any boys, right? And then Bill's like, you need to put more clothes on, right? I mean, like she's in the pool, she's wearing like a bikini, like that's. It's like normal, dude. Like you, these overprotective dads.
Well, Hank mentions that maybe giving Bill's daughter, aka Mia, too much space is a problem, which Bill is like, excuse you. Of
Yeah.
course, not knowing that Hank and Mia already played mini golf. Then there's this painting that Hank points out that he thinks is garbage. And
Yeah.
Bill says he could have bought a car with
Yeah.
the money to buy the painting. And then Hank's like, he thinks that you should still buy the car and run over the artist who painted that turd, which
Sure.
is really uncalled for
Yeah.
and really mean because I painted that
Yeah.
photo.
Hey man, that's pretty brutal, but I do appreciate though, like did they buy it from you like just for the set, or did you not get as much money as they're like pretending that it was worth?
Yeah, I mean, I had an agent that took a percent, and the manager took a percent, and then
Yeah.
the website took a percent, and like, I definitely didn't wind up with car money, I'll tell you that.
And you were left with $7 at the end, right? The same amount that we're going to make from Patreon as a result of this podcast.
Hey man,
So,
$7, $7.
yeah, no, there's you can do a lot with that, right? Especially if you like roll the bills up.
Karen comes downstairs. Hank tries to intercept her to hug, but this is reality, and she goes and, you know, sidesteps and goes and hugs Bill.
It is very smirky, flirty between them still. You know, there's definitely a triangle going on here.
And then he says, it's all good. Or, sorry, Bill says, it's all good. And then Hank makes fun of him for trying to be hip and cool when Bill doesn't even know that his daughter is actually the hip and cool ahead of her time one.
Right. Yeah. And, I mean, Bill is never going to be who's ever going to be as hip and cool as Hank Moody, right? He gets to hold that over everyone. So you don't really have a chance. Like, I mean, Bill, he's like, not even a bad dude, man. He really isn't. But like, he just, you know, it's like everybody loves Hank. So, and then Becca comes in.
Becca comes down the stairs. Hank tries to intercept her with the hug.
Yeah. Yeah.
And nope. Becca comes down the stairs. I got it wrong. And says she still hates him for taking away from the party from episode one. She still wants to see his movie, though. And Hank corrects her and says it's his book, not his movie. And Becca says it's not her problem. The movie proves that you're not the asshole they say you are. Ooh!
Yep.
Implying.
She also said she likes the movie. Right. And so that you could just see, you know, Hank just, you know, his heart is just breaking, right? Because, you know, he has defined his identity as hating that movie. And yeah, then she's got to pay the money for swearing. Right?
For swearing.
Yeah. Pretty great scene there where they pass the money back and forth.
Hank, with that skipping a beat, like you said, fines her for the bad words. And then Hank was like, who called me an asshole? You know, implying to Karen and Bill. Karen then wants to switch custody for weekends. There's a dinner with Runkle and Marcy, Hank's agent, and Runkle's lady, and Bill and Karen are like, okay, well, why don't we just invite Hank? And Hank can bring a date.
Not a good decision. Absolutely not a good decision.
And then Hank's like, Becca, put in your earbuds. Hank says that Karen wouldn't be able to handle seeing Hank with another girl.
Right.
Hank's like, Karen's like, yeah, I can. And Hank is like, that means you're going to marry me? And Karen's like, or you're not going to marry me.
Yeah.
And Karen's like, and
Karen says, I think this might be some projection on Hank's part here, right? Hank's like, oh, well, you won't be able to handle it if I'm with another girl. And it's like, oh, maybe it's you can't handle it, bro. So.
Damn. Anyway, Karen says it'd be nice if they can all just, like, get along, which Hank wants, just, you know, not with Bill, you know?
Right. Well, and then doesn't he say it would be nice if I could fellate myself while farting the White Album?
Yes.
Why you gotta be farting the White Album? Like, I mean, if I could fellate myself, I really couldn't care less if I could, you know, get, you know, back in the USSR out of the other end. Like, I don't need that. Right? That just seems unnecessary.
Extends the mental picture of an impossible physical state.
Oh, it's not impossible. It's not impossible. I've seen it.
Oh, now you're better than Hank Moody, eh?
I didn't say I've done it, but I mean, I've seen it. Just saying.
Anyway, the next scene, we see Hank in Runkle's office talking about how hot the assistant is, and it is making Hank want to touch himself in bad places. And in 2020, what is even a bad place to touch yourself in 2020?
Yeah. Well, all the extra fat you've put on as a result of the pandemic, that's because you look like Winnie the Pooh if you do that. You know, it's like you pat your stomach. So that's a bad place.
Yeah. So I was thinking, like, I don't think there's a singular place. There's like combos of places. Like if you stick your thumb up your ass and then put in your mouth, that's bad. Or
why?
I'm just saying combos. I mean, it would taste
bad. You sound like a square, man. I mean, this is, you know, that girl back at the beginning of episode one, right? Who just wants guys to go down on her, you know, no shower. Like, you sound like you ain't getting that. I'm just saying. No.
So, squares got a square, you know? I mean, a little space.
Yeah, there's no bad combo. But listen, people, you do need to take care, you know, if you're going from back to front. There's a lot of bad stuff that can happen right there. So just, you know, make sure you're as sanitary as you can possibly be.
So Runkle, he's like, oh, she's, I don't like her. She's like a pain. And then, doesn't do any of her job. Does all the coffee wrong. And then Hank drops the poker player's live read that she has a back tat. Therefore, she means, therefore, she likes in the butt.
Yeah, that's what he said.
Runkle's
Yeah,
like, really? What? Oh.
he actually said pooper, right? Which is
Pooper.
kind of amazing, because that was like a really old school, like forum joke on 2 plus 2, right? Which was SIIHP, right? Which is basically whenever you asked for advice on anything having to do with a girl, that was the standard response, which was stick it in her pooper. This
I didn't know
was,
that.
yeah. So this was a, this is a very, yeah, I mean, this is a group of, sexually frustrated young men who are, spending their days playing poker and not interacting with human beings. So these are the kinds of things that you get. But honestly, it is kind of sad to see it reflected in the show a little bit, right? Very 2007 kind of scene here, says like a back tat is the watermark of the promiscuous. I mean, and then comments on the nipple rings, which are just kind of awesome, right? I mean, like, this stuff is.
Oh, we didn't even get to the double one. Like, basically, how did she get hired? Like, if she can't do any of the jobs, like, what did Runkle, presuming Runkle is the one that hired her, was it
Yeah.
like hired at first sight? Is that a thing?
Yeah,
Getting
we
hired at
know the
first sight?
answer, right? We know the answer to that. It's like they can't have the discussion, and no one can ever have that discussion because people can't be honest about it. But we know why she was hired.
Diversity.
And yeah, she's a, because you have to hire a certain percentage of people with nipple rings. And that, but then you shouldn't be surprised when, not that people with nipple rings can't be competent, they absolutely can be, but you shouldn't be surprised if you hire somebody for nipple rings and not, for the their actual job qualifications, that you get somebody who doesn't really know what she's doing. It's like, that's on you.
Hank changes, as you said, about the assistant's nipple rings, and Hank is like, "No, let's talk about jobs." And Hank is
Yeah.
turns it turns his back
Yeah.
on the couch. His back is to Runkle,
Right.
and Runkle's like, "There are no job offers."
Right.
Now I noticed that having an agent or manager, or whatever the hell Runkle is, it's like a great therapist. He's like boosting your ego, like trying to tell you to grow up, but like you could just be like, "No, yeah."
Honestly, it does seem like that's his role as much as anything, right? Because the thing about it is, you can actually understand this as somebody who creates something, right? Or even as somebody who plays poker, right? Like, you're, some days if you play poker, you just maybe didn't feel like playing, right? And there was like nothing wrong with that. It was like, okay, like, you knew you were leaving money on the table by like not playing that day, but it was fine. But if you're playing on like an online site and you have like an agent who's like generating rake back, that person's income is like dependent on you. So they're like really incentivized to try to get you out there. So Runkle, he's very incentivized to try and make sure that his talent is working, right? Yeah, and it, from Hank's standpoint, right, he does feel a little bit bad, but he's flush with all that, love. What is the name of that stupid movie again?
Crazy little thing called love.
Thank you. He's flush with all that crazy little thing called love, cash. There was one line in this scene, maybe you were going to bring it up, but were you going to bring up the Charlie comment about Karen?
I think I missed that. What
So
was the comment?
Charlie makes a comment on here that like he remembers when he used to watch Karen breastfeed.
Oh, that turned
That's
him
a
on, yeah.
really weird thing to say to a friend, right? And of course there's like nothing wrong if Karen was breastfeeding, but perhaps you shouldn't be like staring at like your best friend's girl at this moment. Like, if you're watching the kid breastfeed, like, whatever, but it was just a really weird thing to bring up. And Hank didn't seem to mind, so I guess it didn't matter.
I mean,
Yeah.
considering what Hank does, like just watching breastfeeding is kind of like, as you said, square.
I suppose. Yeah. I mean, it's a pretty square thing, to be fair. It's not a really sexy thing, so.
So the assistant comes in, and she's beautiful. Hank presses and asks if she has nipple rings on
She
one or
she's not
two.
she's not my type.
Okay, well, I'm just saying.
I thought her elbows were pretty pointy.
that Liv Voorhees elbow they're not pointing.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, she's a little bit skinny for me, but yeah. So
then Hank compliments the nose ring, which he gives Runkle another live read and says about the assistant. Runkle's like, what? Then she likes to do it in the nose? And
Runkle, he just, you know, I mean, that was kind of funny, but he doesn't get it.
Yeah, but it's like Runkle's an idiot. She has a nose ring because it's the, you know, representing a bull. She's obviously a Taurus, born in April. Yeah, so clearly, like, I don't know why Runkle.
Yeah, are Tauruses born in April?
Yes. April, late April, early May.
Is this when your birthday falls?
Yeah. That's how I get a read.
Word. All right. Cool. Good job. My birthday's also in April. I'm not a Taurus, so I was...
yeah, because you have early.
I was perplexed. Yeah, you got it. Okay. Sorry, I'm not an expert on really anything except Californication. All right, so let's move on to I think we're in the bar now.
Yeah, Hank is with this British lady who is trying to convince him to use to blog, and she compliments him that he's a man's man, a writer, has swagger like us. She's like, Hank, you got a blog for me, or us, Hello Magazine, and Hank makes a move, and she's like, no, I want you for your talent. Plus, I'm taken, you know.
Yeah. So. This was a great scene if you are, and you have some real life experience with this, but if you are trying to woo a narcissist, right, which, I mean, Hank, he's kind of a narcissist. If you're trying to woo a narcissist, what she does is absolutely perfect, right? She says, you're a real writer, a real man, right? You've got heart and balls and swagger, right? And like, this is, I mean, if you watch any of the sycophants around, like, you know, President Trump, I mean, this is the way, I mean, you know, Mike Pence, every time he gets up, right, he is just lavishing the most preposterous praise on this guy. And this is how people are talking to him in private. And this is how, this is how you get interviews with the guy. And this is what read, you know, Google the Kim love letters. I mean, these are just, they just came out yesterday from some of them from the Bob Woodward, you know, book release that they're doing. I mean, Kim Jong-un wrote love letters to this guy. I mean, these are just like, I mean, they are just dripping with homoeroticism, but this is how you get to President Trump, because you just, you know, flatter him, and bringing it back to Californication, this is how you get to Hank, right? Hank needs to hear this stuff because he's getting beaten down at home, right? He's getting, you know, his own daughter is telling him that she likes this movie that he thinks is just horrible. And, you know, I mean, he's feeling pretty bad about himself. So it's not a surprise to me. This woman, she knows what she's doing. She's very skilled.
And she's the first woman to reject him.
Mm-hmm.
For.
Is that true?
I think.
Karen.
Well, I mean, she didn't reject him to begin with. Like, there was love at first sight.
That's true. That's true.
9 months later, Becca. Spoilers. So. So she's like, oh, she's in a relationship, and then, you know, Hank is getting it on with this other lady at her place, and this lady asks him to evaluate her breasts, and he's like,
yeah, very nice. Well, that's the lady from the car, right?
Oh, yeah. Was it?
Yeah, because he opens, after he gets rejected, he opens the napkin. Right. Or he opens not the napkin. He opens the piece of paper she threw at him, and her name and number is on there. And that's why I was saying, like, he was when he said, like, oh, you have potential. It made it seem like she wrote something really clever and flirty on the thing. But she just wrote her name and number. Right. Mm. And then, yeah.
Maybe the handwriting, the calligraphy, you know.
I guess. Or maybe he's just. See, that's the thing. Hank just shouldn't be that excited about getting a number. This guy just seems like he doesn't even seem like he does numbers. It seems like people just run into him and they're like, hey, want to fuck? He's like. Okay, no.
So Hank's getting it on with this lady, and she asks him to evaluate her breasts, and, you know, he's like, they're nice. And then she's like, can you evaluate my lips? He's like, you know, they're nice. And she's like, no, my lips down there. He's like, oh.
Yeah.
And then pays a bunch of compliments, and you know, and stuff like that. And he's about to go, she's about to go down on him.
Yeah.
And then Hank notices this DVD on the side, and he's like, is that you on the cover? She's a porn star. She in 2020, this wouldn't happen. There's no need for a DVD.
No, there you just have, you know, your own Pornhub playing probably on a big screen in your house, you know.
Outdated.
But can we talk about this scene a little bit in a kind of serious way, because I mean it relates to some of the stuff we were saying before. Yeah. Yeah, we're very serious people. And you know, you need to respect us. So because the kind of people that you should respect on this world are people who tell you that, you know, you should respect them all the time. Hmm. So this scene is like a kind of through the looking glass scene right here, because it's just, first of all, it's just really sad, right? You have a beautiful woman who's saying, like, you know, basically, like, you know, my breasts aren't good enough, you know, my vagina's not good enough, right? Things like that. And, you know, so she's just, you know, I mean, it's this super kind of objectified thing where she's feeling like she needs to do all of this stuff. I mean, bring it back to the first episode, right? When Becca says, you know, this is how you get guys to like me, right? This is the same position that this porn star is in, right? Where she's like, you know, I really need guys to like me. So these are the kinds of things I need to do. And she looks fine, right? And that's what Hank says as well. And that's kind of like one of the good things about the show is Hank is often affirming people for who they are, right? And he'll do it again kind of later on in the episode as well. And so that's a really nice thing. But at the same time, we're watching a TV show, right? And what is more responsible for, you know, making women insecure about, you know, their bodies and having to, you know, deal with the kind of male gaze than television, right? And things like that. So it's this kind of thing where it's like, I want to give it a big thumbs up because, like, Hank's reaction is awesome. He's like, no, you don't need to, like, what are you talking about? You don't need to do any of that. But then I'm also like, but this is being written into like a TV show where we're like completely objectifying women and they throw boobs in our face at like every opportunity. So I don't know what to do. Right. It's like, I'm happy for two reasons, right? I'm happy because I'm seeing boobs, and I'm happy because Hank is telling her like, yo, you're great. Right. You don't need to change any of that stuff. But I'm sad because I'm happy seeing boobs, and I'm sad because of, yeah, because this is a very real situation, right? And it's a very real thing that not just women face, especially in 2020. Men also face this for sure, but women have it a lot worse in this regard.
Well said. And can we just appreciate the writing and the characters in the story?
Anyway, I mean, yes and no. I mean, there's yes, we can, but the writing. I mean, I think in order to, I don't know. I think in order to, maybe not. Maybe the answer for me is no.
Well, we hear a baby crying.
Yeah.
And then Hank's like, "Oh, you gonna attend to that?" And then she's like, "No. She'll stop crying." And then Hank's like, "No, stop. No sexy time. Go tend to your daughter."
Yeah.
Kisses her on the forehead.
Right. She's like, I mean, who would like who? Yeah, a baby crying is not a reason to turn down sex. But, you know, that's, I mean, babies cry. That's what they do. You just let it cry.
Cock blocking.
I mean, certainly, how many parents, right? I guess, you know, to be fair, parents of newborns, I don't think they have very much sex. So,
whoa.
Know, maybe, yeah. No, that's, yeah, I mean, that's why I've never had any kids. So.
Then Hank is home, takes a swig, and then starts blogging. Yeah. Doing his job for Helle magazine, parroting his book.
Terrible name, yeah.
Parroting his book, he says the and the movie. So he turns it from Hank, God hates us all, to Hank hates you all, and insight on this crazy little thing called life, and then drops knowledge.
Yeah.
The first thing is morning awkwardness is better than a night of loneliness.
Sure. Although I'd rather just have, you know, evening loneliness after you have, you know, a good time, and then you have to, I'm sorry, evening awkwardness when you have to, like, you know, tell them, like, you gotta go. It's time to leave.
Well, it's 3:18 a.m., so let's have our moment of morning awkwardness.
All right. It's time. Thanks, Wayne. I got what I needed. You know, you gotta get out of here.
I'm outie.
Yeah. Well, that wasn't awkward, right? That worked out actually really well.
Sick. And two, Hank won't go down in history, but he will go down in his sister, which is not true because we're talking about him in, you know, 13 years after.
Yeah. This is absolutely historical. I mean, if you make it from 07 to 20, right? I mean, we, you know, what have we talked about? Two things we talked about, 9/11 and Californication, two biggest things that have happened in our lifetimes.
And it's 2020, which is a crazy little year we don't love. Yeah. Three, Hank wants a little hair on the nether regions.
Yeah.
I don't think that's too bad.
No, but how much time have they spent talking about, you know, how vaginas are groomed at this point, right? Becca being confused about a hairless woman, right? And then, it's come up. And of course, even Marcy's job, right, is to be a... is a groomer of the stars, so, you know, so to speak. So yeah, this is very, I don't know, the writers are really interested in, you know, whether...
Writer, one, it's Tom Capinos.
Is he really the only writer for the show?
I'd like to think so.
Okay, well, Tom is very concerned about, Tom is really into, you know, 80s porn. I think he favors a big bush.
There's like always that thing that in the movie poses as Tom and Katie. What if it's Tom Capinos and some other Katie?
You know, there is a thing. The chair at the beginning of the show has the name like Kieran Reese on it, RHYS, and those are his two kids' names, I believe. I believe it's the writer of the show. Yeah.
Good trivia.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, I mean, these are good questions, and he asked, why is LA so bent on killing its female population? And in 2020, we're like, oh no, the entire internet is bent on killing the female population.
Well, and the president is intent on killing, you know, as much of the population as he possibly can. So there's no avoiding the killing. Yeah.
We're also talking about you in the comment section, you know, that throw shade. So leave women alone. Go fire at us.
Anyway. Yeah, no, listen, you guys can, I mean, the jokes, you know, just make sure they're, you know, just keep it reasonable. You know, we don't like to see people being harassed.
And, reasonable, anyway.
Yeah, if you guys need to send off some really offensive, vulgar stuff, you can have my email address, you can send that to me. You know, like, I'm happy to take it. I deserve it, you know, I mean, my mom has made clear that I deserve, you know, the worst that you have to throw at me. So,
damn,
I'll take it. Yeah.
Well, Hank gets back to Bill's place, and this is the scene you're talking about, where Mia is in a bikini and swimming in the pool, and Mia straight up is like, you know, gets out of the pool. She's like, dude, I got statutory rape on you, so, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, no, she really said that. She's clearly holding this over. And this is what I mentioned this a little bit on episode one, but honestly, this is a bunch of the tension in season one. This is the really big plot point for a while in this show. And every time they're together on screen, it's just because it just feels like it's going to come out and at any time, because Mia's a loose cannon. You know, Mia has that. Mia could play like, you know, Mia has that like whole maniac thing going on, so she could, you never know what she'll do, right? And that gives her like some real playing advantages here, and she holds over on Hank right now for sure. So
Bill comes by and says, Mia, you should cover yourself up, and she's like, I'm sure it's not something that he hasn't seen before. And then
I mean, again, right, this somewhat uncomfortable, you know, thing here where we're sexualizing a 16-year-old who's not really 16 and things like that, and her dad clearly is thinking along the same thing, right? She says hi daddy, and like she, after she says this stuff to, you know, Hank, she says hi daddy in like a really girlish voice, you know. And yeah, you've got this overly conservative dad who clearly has no idea what his daughter's up to. You know, really, really weird spot, really weird spot.
Or maybe he knows the cameras are on him, so he's got to pretend.
There's levels and levels of cameras for sure, and gazes.
So Hank does something uncalled for, which is declaring war on Bill for breaking up his family, take his family. Yeah. And then Karen comes in, introduces Sonia, who loves Hank's writing, and the adaptation that Steven Soderbergh was going to do in the movie. So here we keep intertwining with like a lot of the girls that like Hank. Like, what's reason? Like, you know, one person's like, "Oh, I love the movie. Oh, I love the book. Oh, you know, I love your looks or I love your job." Blah blah blah.
Right.
It's always something different.
Well, and who does Hank like too, right? Hank kind of likes her because she, I assume that like Soderbergh adaptation, right, had more Hank Moody in it, right? I assume he was like, it was
Sure.
closer to the text or whatever, and it clearly he favored that over, you know, whatever ended up coming out. So yeah, that's and yeah, I mean, like, you can see why there's appeal. Like, I mean, creative, you know, somebody who's creatively gifted, that is a really, that's a really positive thing for a guy. So that is going to make a guy attractive. So in that sense, as much as we can joke about this show being ridiculous, right? It's like the fantasy of a writer who puts himself at the center, and has, you know, girls just throwing themselves at him. Like, that's not how real life is. But, you know, this is,
It's
I mean,
not.
this is, well, but here's the thing, it can be, right? It can be if you hit it big enough, right? If you show that you're actually in like an elite creative person, then it can be your life, right? So yeah, it, you know, you can, you basically, the great thing about being a guy and the thing that's really unfair is that you get credit on the like attractiveness scale for all of your accomplishments, right? And that's what we said last time when I made that kind of joke about, you know, Becca, and it's, I made the joke about like, you know, women should just realize that guys appreciate, you know, education, and women who, you know, set out to, you know, have accomplishments in their professional careers, and the thing is, like, they don't appreciate that at all, right? For the most part, right?
In my
Maybe they're not
network, they're like,
for the
they
most.
just tack on like superficial qualities. It's like whatever girl, like they might be fixated on, they just like name qualities of that person when they're actually like, you know, fixated on that person. Like, oh, this is hot. Like, Maria Konnikova, the author, the New York Times bestselling author. I got so many messages and texts like, is she single? And, you know, she's married. But he's like, oh, I love this intellectual, you know, went to Harvard, you know, wrote books. So I'm like, so if she didn't have those credits, would you still, you know, be interested?
Well, I mean, you have a fair point, right? So maybe there are people out there that are appreciating a little bit more. But I think when people are looking for, when people are looking for companions, right, they're obviously looking for people who have more similarities, right, than that. But as far as like the kind of like instant like head turning thing, right, like the instant things of attractiveness, it's never going to be, you know, oh, you've written a book, oh, you're, but the other thing, I mean, honestly, it's for the guys that you're talking about, it's mostly it's she's a poker player, right? I mean, they're like, wow, this is cool, I could, because like, look, I know tons of women with PhDs, right? And like, I don't
Like
think that
Liv
they would say
Boree.
that.
Liv Boree, shout out to Liv Boree.
Yeah, well, I mean, here's the thing, do guys like Liv because she has a PhD?
Liked her because she recognized who I was on the CBS slot.
Right. Okay. So this is how you get to a narcissist, right? So that's good. But no, yeah. I mean, of course, that's like a big thing. You're like, oh, you know me, right? And that's
I just
why.
wasn't expecting it, but you know, it's like whatever. I mean, she was super nice. Shout out to Igor Kurganov too. We had a good time on National Geographic Brain Games. Anyway, like,
Well, anything else you want to name drop?
yeah, more, but that comes in later in the show.
Oh, okay. All right. We'll save it. We got a lot of episodes here, so we'll save it. So yeah, Wayne was on Brain Games. You guys can check out that episode, right? Brain Games starring
Season
Ted Danson.
8, episode 2. Yeah.
Yeah. Wayne is, and
The star,
this is
let's say.
truth, because I make fun of Wayne a lot, because why wouldn't I? But Wayne is amazing on this episode.
Oh, who, me?
He's
Oh, come on.
On this episode of Brain Games,
Stop.
right? No,
Stop.
listen, honestly, the guy, okay, I'm talking to the audience now, I'm not talking to Wayne, okay? Wayne's ego, the guy's ego is in the stratosphere, okay? So you can't give him any love, because if you give him any love, it's too much, right? You have to deal with him, right? Okay. But he's really good on the show, right? And I would tell you well, I don't know, maybe I wouldn't tell you, but I would certainly tell him. And I haven't told him. He's really good. He's amazing on the show. It's something you need to check out. He gets all kinds of props from who? What is it? Key or Peele? Which guy is on the show?
Key and Michael Key.
Okay, yeah. So Key and he's one of the hosts, and then Ted Danson is the other host. And Wayne, these guys just give Wayne mad props, right?
They ripped on me. They were like, oh, shame on you.
Okay, I don't we're not going to go into that because they're basically giving mad props on this show, right? And I give like a 90% recommendation for anybody to go out and watch this show.
Okay, in all seriousness, let's get back to
Yeah.
Californication. So, Hank goes to Karen and he's like, "How are you gonna sabotage all my efforts to get back together, with you?" And Karen's like, "No, no, no, it's Elvis, it's Elvis." Then Hank preps for the triple date: Bill, Karen, Runkle, Marcy, and Sonia. And then Mia and Becca are also in this crazy little date at Bill's place. And then
Really
Mia.
uncomfortable date. This is, I mean, this show is a soap opera for men, right? I mean, that's what we're
Sure.
dealing with. Yeah. Okay.
Then Mia and Sonia, under the table, feel up one of each of Hank's legs,
More children.
which I know you and I have experience at the poker table, except it's dudes, not women.
The thing is, you all might think Wayne is making a joke, but that hits a little bit too close to home, and I'm not going to share the details, but let's just say it is possible to be sexually assaulted anywhere.
They cheers, all the people cheers, and Sonya asks how Karen and Bill met.
Yeah.
And Hank
Which
interjects,
is
like,
what are you doing? That's the most socially incorrect question you could possibly ask in the situation.
does she know?
I assume, I mean, maybe not.
Could not have known, no shot.
Yeah, I guess. But yeah, I guess that makes more sense, but I don't see why she wouldn't have known. Like, she's like Karen's friend, right? Karen invited her to the shindig, so she should know, but yeah, really uncomfortable question
Yeah, but
to
are
ask.
women friends gonna be like, "Oh yeah, I totally cheated on my boyfriend to meet this other dude"? They're always gonna like put a narrative, differently or whatever. It's
Well,
fine.
she must be a fringe friend because she would have known what was going on. She may not have known, but she would have known that Karen recently broke up with Hank at the very least, right? So she might not have
Sure.
known that it was because, Karen was like a philandering Jezebel, but I mean, listen, man, cheating on people just destroys them. It's not cool. So.
So Hank comes up with we'll summarize the story of the narrative that the architecture of destruction happened in this present architecture.
Yeah.
Do you remember the story? Do I have to
No.
recount it for the audience? So basically, Bill hires Karen to redecorate the house, hence the architecture of the
Got it.
destruction of the relationship. I don't know. I tried.
Yeah.
And
Yeah,
then
yeah.
basically it happened, the destruction happens within the architecture of the house. Meanwhile, Mia and Sonia are both feeling hanging on the table, in which,
Yeah.
recounting that maybe we experienced the table multiple times, just like Hank experienced it multiple times.
Well, I hope not because there's another potential crime in there for him. So, hopefully not multiple times. We'll
So Mia
see.
asks how Hank and Karen met, and then Becca tells the story, which is just like why I love this character so much, because it's so heartbreaking. She just
Yeah.
wants this stuff. She's just like, "My mom and dad, love at first sight, banged at first sight."
Yeah.
9 months later, she was born, and they were together for longer than many other couples, in
Yeah.
even whatever stint that they had. And
But you got but you I mean the story that she told though was, I mean, even though she said they had sex or whatever, but like it was a pretty touching story the way that she told it, even though it was clearly like at the beginning it was kind of like one of these one night stand things that ended up, with the kid in a relationship, right? And like a real years long relationship. So it was really touching. Like, how do you, like, do you know how your parents met?
Yeah.
Okay. Would you be able to tell it in a touching way? No.
I mean, it was touching. Like, I don't know. It's kind of like they, some instructor from my dad, and some like instructor from my mom was like, "Oh, you guys should go to a party," and they actually just hit it off right away.
Okay. That's actually pretty nice. I mean, I like I
No,
could
what's
tell you this
that?
story because like if I were to tell the story, right, I'd be like, well, you know, my parents met at a, you know, pizza place and they were, you know, roughly the same age in high school, so and they were like, you know, 15, and so yeah, I guess so my mom decided to stop like banging the 30-year-old at the horse track that she was banging and then decided to get with my dad. Like, it's just, you know, it's not as nice. You know, so
Who
like
paid for the
I
pizza?
yeah well I it's no one pays for the pizza when you got employees, you know, doing God knows what in the background. So you know, but you know I mean, you don't want to know what's on the pizza. So yeah, but it was really actually I it was another heartbreaking kind of Becca scene to have her like tell the story. And by the way, this was actually the first time I even knew, like, I guess they were there at the very beginning, but like Runkle like gave kind of Becca like a little hug, and like that was the first time that I had like even remember that they were part of the scene. Like, I'm not even sure why they're there, but I guess maybe did Runkle bring Sonya? Did
No.
Karen? Yeah, I thought Karen
Karen
invited
brought
Sonya, right?
Sonya. Yeah.
Yeah.
They were there because it was an awkward moment that the week before Becca spilled that Karen and Bill were having dinner with Runkle and Marcy, and then Becca was like, "Your agent, like, let's all have dinner together."
Right. And I mean, they're friends, right? And they kind of all know each other and things like that. But honestly, in real life, this kind of stuff, I guess maybe it's a little different because he's an agent, they're in Hollywood and they're all like mutual friends. But in real life, when you break up with someone, right? Like, you don't, like, they have this history. I believe they were in New York together, right? Like Runkle and Marcy with Hank and Karen. And in real life, when you break up, you do not continue to meet with these friends. Then again, you really don't have dinner parties with your
No,
ex either.
that's
So,
TV shows, yeah.
and well, this is why. You can see why. Look at how awkward this particular event is.
I thought it was awesome.
Yeah,
But
sure.
one of the things about Becca is basically she was born from a fairy tale, love at first sight, you know, bang at first sight 9 months later, and she still wants to
Yeah.
believe in fairy tales.
That's really sweet. Yeah, because
And,
she's
yeah.
very young, and she has, you know, she's definitely learning about the realities of the world, but she still wants the kind of mythical world that she hopes is still possible.
And to her credit, she still sees the fairy tale in
Yeah.
her parents.
Yeah.
So
She's actually a
she's.
still actively trying to bring it about. Yeah.
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 Anyway, Mia has to go, so
Yeah.
gives Hank a last squeeze on the table.
Right.
Sonya tells an irrelevant story to the table about the audience.
Yeah.
Basically, it's just a setup. It's just like,
Yeah.
how did you break up? Well, my
Yeah.
ex-husband went out with his secretary,
Oh,
which turned
yeah.
out to be a dude. So
Yeah.
he was gay, so.
It was really, and then we're supposed to laugh at that, of course, you know, and all that stuff. And then she's a Scientologist, Sonya the Scientologist, right? And we're supposed to laugh at that. Okay. You know, and then.
This is the important lesson, though, for the guys looking for dates. You will have a higher rate of success if you hit on somebody whose ex just found out that he's gay.
Sure. I mean,
Right?
I think because anytime you can catch somebody with, you know, down on themselves, right? Like, that's the best time. Like, Hank gets rejected by the British woman at the bar. What does he do? He calls up the girl with the number he has, right? Like, anytime you catch somebody. And so, of course, if you're getting left by your husband for another guy, right? Like, you feel awful, right? Although in weird ways, I feel like you shouldn't feel as bad, right? Because like
I
you
was
should.
asked this question like by an ex that was just like, if I cheated on you and I found out I was a lesbian, how would you feel? I'd be like, that's fine, right?
Just invite her over. What's the problem?
Oh wait, that wasn't a joke.
Why'd you leave me out? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I understand. So
So anyway,
now he
like
goes to Becca's room, right? Or sorry, were you not finished with that?
it's like anyway, the whole thing is like all these girls are attracted to Hank, but none of them are Karen.
Yeah, I like the kind of theme that you're drawing out here and kind of having us think about
Which is
as we're going through.
so now that Karen's a derogative term, and what is it?
Yeah, it's a little bit messed up, right, to have to do this show, right, and think about Karen. Although she is, in some ways, kind of a Karen, but
No.
no.
No. She's perfect for the show.
Maybe for
No,
the show, sure.
not the Bill stuff, not her interactions with Bill, but everything else is
That's
like.
not okay. Yeah.
Anyway, like you said, Becca, sorry.
Well, a really dark thing. I mean, he goes to Becca's room, right? You know what? Do you remember the band she's listening to?
No.
She's listening to the Eagles of Death Metal, right? And somehow it seems a little bit relevant, right? We already talked about September 11th at the beginning. You know, the Eagles of Death Metal were the band playing at what was like essentially France's September 11th, which was the attack on the Bataclan, the big concert hall where, you know, a bunch of gunmen kind of came in. And you know, did what gunmen do. And so that's just like this really bizarre, insane connection. And then lately, I think they've been in the news lately for saying something stupid about coronavirus, but gosh,
Like there's nothing stupid said about coronavirus.
no, it's the hoax that is coronavirus, right? So yeah, don't wear your masks, people. You know, because you know, wearing your mask makes you look like a loser.
I also like Becca because she's the one that drops all the truth bombs about Hank.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so Hank's listening to his Walkman, and he's with Becca. Becca cracks open Hank and psychoanalyzes him, which is all he needs, and says the book, his book on, is it nihilism or nihilism? She says nihilism.
Either one. Either
Okay,
one.
I thought it was nihilism, but the book is based on nihilism, and which is firmly rooted in romanticism. That's like, whoa! Hashtag mind blown.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he says, yeah, the book is firmly rooted in romanticism, right? And so, you know, Hank, so yeah, you could see that's honestly like a lot of our lives, right? That's really true. Like we go around and pretend like, you
You
know,
don't want
you there's
anything.
yeah, there nothing matters, right? And this, you know, because everything is absurd in the universe, you know, we're all gonna die and all that kind of stuff, blah, blah, blah. But then we do have, I mean, this is maybe a slight misuse of romanticism, but we do have this kind of like ideal of how life should play out and things like that. So I get it, right? It's a guy that actually is a very, that does feel very modern, right? And I don't know, I feel like she might be, I guess she might be just saying like romantic, but she also might be saying like it's, he's really like, he's actually doing like a romanticist thing, which is something that happens in nihilism too sometimes, but it's really like an individual thing, right? And you know, the individual matters, right? This is coming out of, you know, Britain and like what Keats and Byron and things like that in the late 18th century-ish. So
Look who's
yeah,
showing off
and
now.
yeah, that's what I do. You know, this is how you get on Jeopardy. So
Anyway, Becca drops what many kids of broken families do, which is that Hank got back together, and Becca's about to give Hank the money for swearing, and Hank is like, no. This is the true crazy little thing called love. So.
Yeah, well, because Hank is just so, he's so sad, right, by what she just kind of by her reason for swearing, right? And she, you know, she's so sad about the situation between her parents, and you know, he feels like, I don't know, these people have a lot of dollars on them, right, to kind of hand out at any given time. Hank doesn't seem like he ever has much on him, right? He doesn't have like a man bag, so I'm not sure where he busts out all these, you know, crumpled dollars from, but respect.
Then
So
Becca asks if Hank is okay. And now I know why you hate Becca so much.
what?
Because she reminds you of me. Because I'm always like, Michael, are you okay?
No, I respect that, dude. I appreciate that a lot. Yeah. No, listen, you're the only person who ever checks on me, like, and makes sure I'm okay. Like, you're actually a really awesome, kind-hearted person, and I
Have
appreciate
to
that.
check it down because you're always Del Winter. So I have to
Yeah.
check.
Yeah. Well,
Anyway.
I guess I should bet more. I miss a lot of bets.
And Hank is just like, you know, Hank is like, I know, I'm working on it. Then Becca, the genius, is like, can I get a dog?
Yeah, right. No, that's a good time to ask, right? Like when you've just like psychoanalyzed your dad and kind of made him feel a little bit better based on that, and then she asked that. But I mean, she had asked that
Yeah,
earlier.
that's like me too. I'm like, hey, Mike, can I get a pot? No.
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 That's not, listen, you can have a dog. I'll get you a dog, but I'm not just gonna give you a pot. You gotta earn it. Like, come on, man.
So this is I was mind blown with the next scene because Hank was drinking and then he runs into Sonya. I was
Yeah.
like, oh, okay, they're still at Bill's place and Sonya
Yeah.
just happens to still be there.
Yeah, just like chilling in a room by yourself, like, 'cause that's how you roll at other people's houses. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And they smoke blunts,
Yeah.
and Sonya's like, "Will you do me a favor, Hank?" And then she just robes, or he says, "Okay." She just robes, and
Yeah.
then she's like, "I'm 40 something. I don't have time to waste. What do you think?" And Hank's like, "You're definitely a hottie." Then she
Yeah.
asks whether she could fuck him because her ex-husband
She
was
feels
gay,
bad.
which is
Yeah.
what we're saying, like, try to pick up strat, like, to increase your chances to, get the date. I mean, I'm talking
Right.
about like the audience out there. If they're struggling, they're single, find some women who just found out their boyfriend's last husband was gay. So it's like you're not stealing, you're just, you're trying to give her a positive experience that yes, you are attractive. It
Yeah.
wasn't you, it was them.
Yeah. But maybe if you're really struggling out there, maybe don't shoot for women who actually look like she does, because she does look amazing for somebody who's in her 40s, which she said she was. Like, she looks incredible, and Hank says that. And so, yeah, maybe aim a little bit lower, right? If you're struggling, like, because there's plenty of people who are really suffering out there who have really damaged egos who don't look like that. So.
So Karen and Marcy are having a little, girl chat, and Marcy's like, "Are you seriously gonna marry, Square Bill?" And
Yeah,
then Marcy's
yeah.
like, "Hank's trying to get his shit together. Like
Yeah.
Mike Lamas is trying to get his shit together." Oh, oops,
Yeah.
cereal. Marcy
Yeah.
is like, "Is the sex with Bill good?" And then Karen,
Which we all know the answer is no.
she knows different, so basically it's no.
I mean, Bill's a pretty weird looking dude, right? He's like this gangly kind of tall dude. He's got this like weird like Joker smile going on. So,
And he's a
yeah,
lawyer.
is he a lawyer? Is that what he is?
Yeah, he's a
He's a
lawyer.
publisher, right?
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Oh, whatever.
Because he owns LA, which,
Oh, spoiled it.
ah, man, I'm the worst. It's okay. I was just
Anyway.
joking. He doesn't really own LA. That's a lie.
Hank is with Sonya. They bang, and then Hank like knocks over, breaks the painting, barfs on the painting. That's
Yeah.
worth a car. Hank and
Oh.
Sonya. And I just realized too, because they have weed and they have alcohol, which gets you to throw up. Not that I would know. And Hank and Sonya get walked in on
Yeah.
by, everybody else, because that's, something else that happens. You
Yeah, and
spill
this
some
just
alcohol.
truly absurd scene, right? With, just like bodily fluids and naked people. I mean, this is actually really like this is these are some this is like really out of Shakespeare, actually. I mean, like the just like just absolutely disgusting stuff happening, and just but comical because they're like high, right? And because he ruined this amazing, art piece, which honestly that
I
artwork wasn't
drew.
really.
I
Yeah, I
drew.
mean, like, and like, I mean, I wasn't a huge fan of your piece, but I did notice that Bill had a in one of his bathrooms he had a Miro, which I assume was supposed to be an original because Bill's like really loaded. So I was like, okay, this guy actually has some taste.
In
So
America, we call
maybe,
it mirror.
yeah. He had a mirror in his bathroom, and so I thought he really had some good taste. It was a nice mirror. But so I thought maybe he's got some taste. I mean, he certainly likes abstract art, right? Which is a good, which to me that says something about you, because do you know this, that like liberals, conservatives don't like abstract art? Like they don't like modern contemporary art because it's
I don't know
ambiguous.
anything about politics, and today I'm gonna have David Baker, ODB, on the podcast on 9/11, and he's a liberal, and Roger Ver, who is a teenage friend of mine, is a liberal. I actually don't even know what liberal libertarian. I just like you just want freedom, right? You just want to do whatever. Is that right? No, I just really shot myself in the foot, did I?
Yeah, I mean, freedom is a word that at this point barely has any meaning, right? Because pretty much everybody says that what they're looking for is freedom. But for the fascists, right, freedom involves like going back to living how you used to live or preserving whatever it is that you are able to do and things like that. And they actually consider that freedom, but of course their freedom comes at an ex, you know, to live life exactly as they're doing comes at the expense of, you know, other people's freedom and things like that. So
I swear I finished college.
Yeah, no, I would assume so. But that's but here's the thing, like in 2020, I mean, I guess it is becoming a more difficult thing because of student loans and how much it costs and whatnot, but like it's not that big of a deal, right? Like anybody can finish college. Like you're a genuinely smart person who just has who just this is not like no I
that's not what dad says.
No, I know, man. I'm really sorry about that too. No, it's really tough when you can just never measure up to your dad. You know.
Anyway, sorry. Mia gets back to Bill's place off a cab, I guess, I don't know. And then Hank asks Mia what she wants with him. And Mia says, you know. And this is one of the topics that we discuss, which is like, what does Mia want with Hank?
What do you think Mia wants with Hank?
I think Mia wants Hank's professional respect. Like having completed a book with his own thoughts. Like when she's reading the book at the bookstore, it's like this completed piece of work with awesome ideas. Mia wants that professional respect, but doesn't have the original ideas, can't get through the process, which is, you know, spoilers for the rest of the show. But
do you think that's true right now? Yeah, I mean, that's like, do you think that's true as where we're at in episode 2?
I think this is just mirroring, like, why do famous people get looked up to / admired? It's because the admirer wants the professional respect. Because everybody knows, like, actually being famous really sucks. Like, people judge. Yes. People bother, especially in this era, where people just look up your shit.
Maybe it's just grass is always greener. Maybe famous people say it really sucks. It doesn't seem like it really sucks to me.
It definitely sucks for attractive women, famous people, because they will get stalked by like and DDoS and stuff like that.
So. Well, I mean, like in so many ways, you know, existing sucks worse for women than it does for men.
Sure.
So I get that. And definitely getting, you know, bothered all the time out in public doesn't seem all that pleasant. And yet it seems like one of the thing that people, you know, want, a ton of people want that more than anything else is to be famous.
Right. So, but I think it mirrors professional respect. It's not actually like the fame portion. They call it fame, like they want to be famous, but they actually want professional respect.
Okay, in a profession, where getting professional respect just means getting famous.
Yeah, because like when you watch and you admire a famous person, you're getting all the good side and you're getting none of the downside.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I mean, you really don't have to interact with the downside when you're not part of it, right. For sure. I think your read. And there's some ways in which your reads on the show are really prescient and are going to, I think, really illuminate some of the future episodes. I have a simpler interpretation of Mia right now. I really think Mia's just in love with Hank. You know, like this, I mean, he's a really cool guy who's, you know, the not like her squarish dad, and she's 16 and she has a huge crush on him and she slept with him, right? And that has a really powerful effect on people too, like, you know, sleeping with people releases all sorts of bonding chemicals and things like that. And you know, so and I mean, like, expect, like, I mean, 16 year olds can't, they often don't deal super well with adults often don't deal well with the feelings that sex brings up, let alone, you know, 16-year-old. Yeah, right. Well, it's, I mean, listen, I'm just frankly pretending because I didn't want to admit that like you just did. I didn't want everyone to know.
We are both versions, so we are hypothetical. Okay, go on.
Yeah, that's all. I mean, we're just, listen, I just read stuff, yeah, really.
Same.
And I have friends tell me, you know, I have 3, 4, 5 hour conversations with women who tell me about all the stuff they did to other guys
Right.
that day. So I know how it is.
Right.
Yeah. But I just think she's really, I think she really just digs Hank. I mean, I think that the way she looked at him in the bookstore, but I also think, Mia is kind of a menace, like, so there's definitely some, I mean, of all of the characters on the show that we've met thus far, Mia might be the most obvious one, and who belongs in the DSM-4, who very clearly has some kind of diagnosable mental illness that could be done, because she's a special case.
And Hank is like, this is sick and wrong. And
Yeah.
Mia's like, what's wrong with the little fucking and punching? Oh, shout out to the future book title.
You shh, shh.
Oh,
Yeah.
oops.
Yeah,
Oops.
your future book title,
My
right?
future
Yeah.
book.
Yeah. And fucking and punching, right? A story, Wayne's poker biography.
Mia, Mia says she's gonna bring out, with all this awkwardness, they're obviously not gonna sleep together this time. Mia says she's going to bring out her vibrator and read Hank's blog from Hellay Magazine, which is like,
Yeah,
it's.
I mean, this is just a really tough spot for Hank to be in. And I mean, look, he did statutorily rape her, but I mean, you can sympathize in some ways with his position, right? He's in a pretty bad spot. He did not know. And Hank is like, he's not a complete piece of garbage, right? Like, he would not have slept with somebody had he known or suspected that it was an underage girl. And he wouldn't have done that. And he's, and of course he's in a really bad spot, and of course this is a soap opera, right? This is like, but I mean, a really awkward subject matter for the male version of Sex and the City here, for sure.
So then she adds one thing, like reading her vlog, reading Hank's blog, to her vibrator, and she's like, "I totally fucked that guy." So that's.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I've had my fill of Mia for the day.
And then the news bomb is that Bill, her dad, owns Hellay magazine.
Right.
So
Right.
Bill is the one that got Hank the job, even
Right.
though he's gonna marry Hank's ex-girlfriend slash wife.
Yeah, which is again, to defend Bill again, like, this is like, you have to respect Bill's professionalism here. Like, he thinks that Hank would be good for his blog, and he was willing to go and hire him,
Are you sure that was? I interpreted it differently.
Oh, interesting. Let's hear.
I interpreted it as Bill is trying to give Hank the opportunity to fix himself by giving him a pity job since
Maybe.
nobody else was going to give him any jobs.
Yeah. No, I buy that. I buy that. But then again, that speaks well of Bill, if you ask me.
It does, but the motive, the intent is that, look, I'm gonna set you straight, so get out of our lives.
Oh, interesting. I had not thought of it like that. I had not thought of it like that. There's one other aspect that just kind of popped into my head, which is there's so much attack on bloggers and blogging in this show, right? And it almost feels like this, it really feels like this outdated 2007 thing where a bunch of like writers are like, "Oh, we're better than bloggers," right? But like, now you can't even say any of that stuff anymore. But maybe he's trying to destroy Hank by turning him into a blogger, right? And people don't respect that, and people look down on it. But then I
I
guess
think
Runkle wouldn't be very
it's
enthusiastic.
the elitism of calling yourself a writer, I think, because like the concept of a blog is that anybody can write something up. And
Which
Hank,
is true, but also not true, because like, if your writing is garbage, or you're writing something not interesting, or you're talking about a 13-year-old TV show, people just aren't going to read it, So, yeah.
So anyway, Hank drives away smoking and dreams of being with Karen.
Yeah.
But the plane
Ah,
is
it's a
flying
great
away above
scene.
him. Yeah.
I mean, it's the second episode in a row where we end with like this pensive, thoughtful Hank, right? The nostalgic, but the airplane is so good, right? Because things, you know, the airplane, people move, right? And things change. And we started at the very beginning of this episode, right? We actually started with Hank moving from New York to LA, right? And this stuff, look, moving adjustment is a thing, right? It's a psychologically really difficult thing. For a lot of people, it takes them a year or more to adjust to the new place that they're in. And it brings about life changes. It does do things like it ends relationships. It creates new relationships, right? Things like that. All of this stuff is really tough, and all this stuff is life-changing. And you can't go back again, right? You cannot turn back time. So these changes, they happen, and they indelibly, you know, alter the course of your life in ways that you'll never really know what could have been had the big decisions, right? Had you made them the other way, right? And so this is, you know, and the airplane, after the airplane, right? Karen was there, and then nobody's there, right? After the airplane. Oh.
Shout out to Tom.
And it just brings us back to 9/11.
Whoa, that was uncalled for. Okay, just kidding. It was called for. Can we pretend the airplanes in the night sky like shooting stars?
Listen, it's been like 19 years, right? I mean,
yeah.
We can make jokes about 9/11 now, right?
Anthony Jeselnik does. Jeselnik.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure we can craft jokes like he can craft them, or perhaps we're not nearly as comfortable being the bad guy as he is. But, I mean, look, can I make Pearl Harbor jokes? Yes, right?
Sure, yeah. Because white people were the victim, so. If you're the victim, then you could make the joke.
Okay.
If you're the person causing the trouble,
yeah,
probably not.
Right, so I probably shouldn't make any Afghanistan jokes, right?
Ooh.
Okay.
Yeah.
No Iraq jokes, right? No Afghanistan jokes, right? So, I'll just make jokes where white people are the victim of terrorism and not where they are the terrorists. All right, fair enough.
So I guess 9/11 technically works. So,
yeah.
If it's victim stuff, but
hey, a lot of people. You know, I actually know somebody who, despite I was very young and living in Michigan, I know someone who died on 9/11. Tons of people know people who died on 9/11. Like, it was pretty fucking terrible, man. You know, before everybody turns me into the cancel police, right? This mythical group. You know, 9/11 sucked, but I'm not gonna stop making jokes about it. All I got.
And there are two people who passed away that I knew. Well, we knew one of them, Mike Sexton, poker legend.
Yeah.
Rest in peace. Another one, Terrence Wong, who I worked with at Gamers.
What?
What?
Oh, I'm no, sorry.
You,
I must
you don't
have
know this person. You don't know
I
this
don't?
Person. No. Whoever you're thinking of, it's not this person. There's no way you know this person.
Okay, well, I'm very sorry to hear that your friends are passing away.
Yeah, and he's 41 years old. We were at Berkeley, and then we were at Gamers.com, and he ended up having a fulfilling career, got married, two kids, and yeah, it's a solid little
all right.
Facebook.
Well, I'm really sorry to hear that. This is a really sad episode. And for those of you guys who are middle-aged like us, you know, I'm sure you guys are well familiar with these experiences. Time doesn't stop, and this is actually a big theme in Californication. You know, like, time moves on inexorably, and it doesn't slow down. In fact, as you get older, right? And I was mentioning to Wayne that this is actually a little bit not true for me at the very moment, but as you get older, time actually moves more and more quickly, right? When you're in like first grade, how long does it take to get to second grade, right? It feels like an eternity. You just want to get older. You're like, I want to get older. But, you know, time now, the days just slip away, right? And you just wake up and you're like, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, you know, stuff just dripped off. You start getting, you know, you start finding out your friends are getting sick on Facebook. Your friends are passing away on Facebook. You know, all of the heroes of your youth, right? People who are like great athletes and great musicians when we were kids, right? They're kicking the bucket now, you know? Or you see them on TV sometimes and you're like, oh my gosh, right? That person is incredibly old, right? And disgusting. And, you know, that's difficult. And so respect to those of you who are middle-aged or even older who are out there suffering that, right? Especially, you know, old people, you know, like all your friends are dead. know, that sucks, right? You're like the last one left, right? That's hard, but I guess it's better to be the last one left than, you know, like you want, like ultimately you want to see all your friends die, right?
Staying alive, staying alive.
Yeah, exactly, right? You don't want to like see them die in front of you, right? Like that's terrible. But like at the end of the day, like, I mean, I want to be able to, I mean, you know, I want to see all my, you know, friends. I want it to be such that I don't even get alerts on the last few friends who passed away because I'm the only one who could alert anyone and I don't talk to anybody, you know? So like, that's my goal. I think I can make it. So far, I'm doing very well.
So now we've gone through two episodes.
Yeah. You might want to cut off that ending. That was really sad.
No.
Too real.
This
too
is
real,
nine.
Man.
This is 9/11/2020.
But we want you guys to feel good at the end of the episode. So, like, you guys can just go back. You can you know, watch the hits of the episode, right? And I guess, you know, when you're watching Californication, there's a lot of time for reflection on this stuff. You know, there's not like a lot of there's not a lot of death on the show, but there is a ton of loss, right? And there's a ton of loss of not only people, but also self, you know, as time goes on. And that is a big theme on the show.
Reflections of reflections.
Yes. Yeah. Lots of mirrors and mirrors.
All right, guys, this is going to do it for season one, episode two of Californication. This is the Californication 2020 podcast. This is Michael Mossom, D22 Soso, Wayne Chung. Hit that subscribe, smash that thumbs up, and we will see you for episode three, season one.
Thank you, guys. Cashmo, Cash App, Venmo, right?
Later.
Send us money in the mail.
Send us money.